So you've just read a case, and the CEO is Evan Winchester, and he's going to be approaching his board. You are the board, and Evan Winchester is going to be played by Kartank Cashman. And Kartank is the CEO and co-founder of MentorWorks Educational Capital. It provides education finance through income share agreements, career networking, and mentor support to students in higher education. Kartank is also a tenured associate professor of finance at the DeMore McKim School of Business at Northeastern University. And he works with student startups as well as an advisor. Kartank has been an angel investor and a member of the Launchpad Venture Group. His research has been cited in such media outlets as Financial Times, Bloomberg, Dow Jones Newswire. Kartank holds a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering from Delhi University and a PhD in finance from Boston College. But for your purposes, right now, Kartank is Evan Winchester.
All right.
Take it away, Evan.
As you can tell from my accent, I'm Evan Winchester.
Perry Brown.
The question in front of us is, we are a company that has been at the forefront of AI technology. And we've become public, and we've become a successful company, which is in itself great. But if you want to keep ahead of the competition, if we need to survive in the long term, we need to figure out a way to become innovative. And that's hard enough in a small company, as I remember it a long time ago. It's pretty hard when you have established procedures. It's very hard when you have when investments have to be approved through through a hierarchy. So the motion here is really to modify our compensation such that we can enhance innovativeness of the entire company, because innovation comes from the top in our company structure. So first question is, you know, do we agree that this idea of modifying board compensation right up here is important to have it percolate down and give proper incentives to everybody else? So I'm happy to take your thoughts.
No.
Okay.
I don't think, I think the compensation plan should be below, board and below. And I think you start changing the board's compensation, you're gonna get issues with shareholders. You've got to be objective. And what do they have to do with the day-to-day on innovation? Unless they're more involved in what you want your board to be.
Does everybody else agree with that, or is there any counter thoughts here? Yeah.
I mean, that was sort of my initial reaction. I don't know this industry very well, but I think of the board as more of an advisory role, not directing day to day. Has there, and not, you know, make certainly making decisions on CEO compensation, senior people, but not involved in the day-to-day decisions to innovate or not. Have we had any experiences where you've brought to us a program that would be very innovative and we did not see the value? Like, how would this change our day-to-day, you know, interactions?
Yeah, how would it change our you know, way of looking at things, right?
Yeah, so one big important thing for us to do when we do these things is, in my mind, having a separate but related entity that we're going to have to invest in, put a lot of investment, that focuses purely on innovation. And there have been different models that have been tried out. So people have tried having an incubator model or a venture capital, corporate venture capital subsidiary, and those usually don't work out very well. What we really need is a system in place, starting right from the top, that creates these business entities that can innovate, but are also related to our business units, which can then be integrated into the business units. So IBM has tried this a while ago, but it has to be kind of the top level. Yeah.
So I would say nothing stops us from doing that. Bring a proposal to the board. Let's look at it. Let's make sure it makes sense. And if the right answer is, let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm with my two colleagues over here.
Okay.
For different reason, I get to the same place. One, which is, if you think about, we're back to the board's role as oversight, and it's to be represent the shareholders.
Yeah.
Shareholders and the shareholder value. And if you look at the compensation rates set today, 70% of it is stock-based, which means it's aligned with the shareholders who own the company. It's actually a higher percent aligned through stock than actually most board compensation of public companies.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it's more like, you know, 55-45, you know, it's 40-60, 55-45, whatever. It's 70% is a high percent to have in stock of a public company in the compensation. So we're already on the heavy end of the alignment, which is tied to the shareholders, which is tied to how the company performs. And as you said, we need to innovate in our environment.
Yeah.
And therefore, we're already aligned with the innovation. So now it's up to you as management to bring the proposals together.
Sure.
However, I've seen many public companies that try to innovate, and as public companies get penalized for that, because the innovation requires investment, it requires incubation, results may not be immediately forthcoming, and the public market is not patient.
The board compensation doesn't change.
The point, though, I guess tying to your comment, though, is that if the board is, I guess, acting as a fiduciary or a representative to the shareholders, the shareholders are, you know, voting, if you will, with their pocketbooks as it relates to the stock price. If the company is trying to invest in innovation, there is an inherent conflict there. I am not necessarily advocating in a specific way for this particular proposal, but I am noting that the shareholder, or being a public company, can make it a challenge to innovate if you're relying totally on the shareholder's perspective.
Yeah.
To that point, the proposal that you're bringing forward,
yeah,
it's kind of like one and done. Have we multi-exclusive, completely exhausted, looked at other ways to align incentives? Because one of the comments that was made here is the opportunity to reprice options when it becomes significantly out of the money. And of course, that's directly in conflict.
Yeah.
Creating shareholder value. So
I agree. It's in conflict with short-term shareholder value, right? But if you kind of think about it, our incentives to take risks is not necessarily going to go up as we have more stock compensation. Our incentives to take risk is going to go up when we have more stock option compensation. That's the distinction I'm trying to make. The option doesn't penalize you as much for taking risks as the stock compensation does. So if innovation is in fact related to long-term value, I would argue that, you know, innovation increases with option-based compensation rather than pure stock-based compensation.
Okay, so but why do you have to reprice it? Of course, significantly below.
Right.
You know, aligned with you until we get to this repricing.
Could we separate the two? Because there are some legal fiduciary accounting reasons for not option repricing. They're huge issues. So separate the proposal, because when you get into option repricing, you're down into a box that I don't, from a fiduciary standpoint, I wouldn't go there now these days unless you're very, very obsessed. But there are other alternatives to your point.
Well, I would second that or third it, whatever it is, because in my experience with repricing, the only time it makes sense is where there's a huge market change, where like 2008, the company is just massive change.
Yeah.
So there are no incentives on the table for the whole company, which meant every employee, not just a selective group.
And then you have to cancel them, and you have to wait 6 months before you
can do it, and it makes sense. And shareholders would approve that because they want to see some leverage for everybody. But if you selectively, you know, a person tries a project and fails and you reprice it, I mean, that's just not going to make sense.
You're in jail. Pretty close. It's really bad.
It's interesting that a 3-year-old company has gotten stale and is now being compared to a 30-year-old company by lack of innovation.
Yeah. Well, Twitter, it happened to Twitter. I mean, Twitter had been having a lot of problems more recently because they didn't innovate a lot more. They didn't introduce a lot more features. So Twitter's not that old, right? So it's not that hard for complacency to creep in. So, but I take your point. I mean, you know, we are at the cutting edge. Why do we, how do we make any difference? So I'll take your point. Yeah.
I guess we have a sense too of who our shareholders are, because I think boards always have an inherent tension between, there's, you're always looking at proposals that might weigh short-term versus long-term value, and you can often, I think this is where sometimes you get activist shareholders very involved. So I think I'd want to understand who our shareholders are, who is buying stock in our company.
Yeah, I mean, we
and what would their, can we tell what they, if it's pension funds or some, you know, is it a long term, a longer term perspective? And then I think you'd have to be able to, in some sense, justify or sell why this would enhance long term value. I'm not convinced that the board having that incentive, maybe the employees and key employees would, or some other proposals for rewarding innovation.
Yeah, I think if you put, it says for management and employees, I think if I read the case right, but you want the board to lead.
Yeah.
But if you put the program together for management and the board is, gets the same deal, so to speak, it's just reversing the way you're talking about presenting it. I understand the board should lead in many instances, but you know, something like this, it's more that you've got 66% of the company is not, I mean, it says that the founder owns 34%. We don't know in the case who owns the rest, but to your point, you know, if this is a still looked at as a growth stock with a lot of institutional shareholders, and you're aligning the compensation structure with what they might value as this being a good, you know, good investment, then it might, that might be a better starting point.
So you're saying based on if the institutional, if there are more institutional shareholders, which most companies have, the majority of the shareholders are institutions, then you should be having the board take more stock options?
No, I think that, you know, the company management comes first.
Management comes
anyway,
first.
But I'm just agreeing with the point of, you know, do our shareholders, not the the company, you know, employees, understand what the value proposition is and
right.
a different compensation structure?
The way I read the case, it seemed to indicate that we didn't have full board support for the plan independent of compensation associated with the results of the plan.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are three members who are kind of iffy on it, and one of
iffy on which it? The plan of innovation, or iffy on the compensation?
The compensation.
The compensation plan,
yeah.
But they're behind the plan itself.
They like the idea of innovation. I think everybody does. I don't think anybody will say that innovation is bad. But here's the question, right? How do we motivate innovation from the very top? If the question is, how do we get them to make acquisitions? For example, take a risky acquisition, which has to be approved by the board, then
and
what
you
are
call
the
call that innovation? That's a synonym for innovation.
Take a risky acquisition of a company which we don't know what's going to happen with the acquisition.
Then
but
why
it's a
are
risky
we doing
acquisition.
The acquisition? What is it? You lost me in the logic chain. That's kind of my
Well, I guess that's one of the things I was thinking about is, you know, we say innovation, but the fact is, if you've got startups with a lot of technology, one of the advantages this company has is they are public.
Yeah.
So they've got a currency that they can trade
sure.
that these other companies don't.
Sure.
Which then allows you to say, okay, what are we? How do we want to grow? Do we want to grow through acquisition, or do we want to grow organically? I think it's very difficult to do both.
Yeah.
I think everyone says they want to do both, but the reality is you kind of do one or the other.
Okay.
And maybe the best way to approach it is to say, okay, we're going to use that currency to buy revenue streams based on other technologies that have been developed to help our product along.
Sure. So I guess consensus, what I'm hearing mostly is, no, don't change the board compensation, don't touch repricing at all. It's okay to change the management compensation to give them more options. Is that what I'm hearing?
But you can't do repricing. I mean, really.
Don't do repricing at all.
Realistically, you don't want the CEO and the CFO and a bunch of board members to go to jail. You really don't.
Right.
It's
no, that's
either
a bad
that idea. Or there's going to be huge restatement costs.
Right.
I mean, there are certain rules. If you want to even think about repricing, then you need to sit down, understand what the rules are, understand the impact, but it's not going to help you in innovation. My experience from other, my other boards that I'll share with this board is that I have a lot of tech companies that go from should we have restricted stock to options, and then they go back to no, we should have more of the other. And it doesn't seem to change the outcome, whether it's restricted stock or options, because the main focus is on the alignment with the shareholders and the value of the underlying stock, essentially, right? So it doesn't seem to move the mindset. At least it never has in any company I've seen.
Are you saying it doesn't move the mindset of the employees that the options versus restricted stock are being granted to?
Exactly.
Right.
They just want to have share ownership.
Right, because I think
restricted stock or options, it doesn't seem to make them more innovative versus less innovative.
Because I think it's very difficult, typically, for most employees to really understand tangibly what the value of that, I'll call it an asset, can be, whether it's restricted stock or options. So
yeah.
I think I agree with Ellen. I think it's less about what the actual instrument is and that there is a instrument to create that incentive, but I think one of the pieces of the puzzle that is often left out of the equation is if you really want to generate innovation and motivate people, there has to be a very specific education process so that the employees who are receiving either this equity currency really understand how it works and how it can be a game changer economically to them. And typically people get shares and they say, okay, I don't really understand what this is.
If you're talking about management though, some things you might want to consider for innovation that I've seen in some of my other lives is, you know, you have incentive pools, right? That are directly tied to introducing new products, getting them out in the market, whatever the right answer is for us in this company, but it's very tied to a deliverable. And the deliverable allows you to take risk, and when you take risk and you're successful, there's a reward. So they're just different choices to think about.
So when you say a deliverable, are you talking about a milestone or a number that you have to hit?
Depends
sales
on what you have to think about what we're trying to achieve here.
Right.
Tied to our strategy. And what are we trying to achieve? Are we trying to achieve a new product? Are we trying to introduce into a new market? I mean, what is it that is your priority from an innovation standpoint? And so you create deliverables around whatever those are.
I want us to explore new technologies. I want us to explore new markets. I don't even know what the outcome should be. That's the problem, right? So how do we deal with a compensation system which is not based on tangible outcomes, but really, really kind of nebulous understanding of some kind of milestone? What is that milestone? I don't even know that. But I want to explore that market. An example is Google X. I mean, if you think about Google X, all they do is go ahead and break things. But out of that comes a whole bunch of cool products that they can go ahead and later commercialize. How do we incentivize that? That's what I want to know.
I mean, I don't know Google intimately, but I know one thing they do. And it's a decision. Do you create a group who's responsible for innovation and you find some way, you know, separate from the people who are doing the day-to-day? I think Google, is my understanding, is everybody is allowed to use 20% of their time to work on whatever they want to work on.
Probably.
Not anymore.
Not anymore?
Yeah.
That's gone.
That's
gone. That's too bad.
Yeah, when they went to Alphabet, they have the X company.
Okay.
Their experimental technologies that's separate, and they're investing heavily in balloon technology, places like that. So that whole idea of, you know, 10-20%, you can just do your own thing, is long gone.
So that's, I mean, but in a way, I talked about sort of what you can think about, what model you want to use. Do you want to have a different group, or do you want to, as they started, invest it in the existing people and give them the space? And you know, simple things like celebrating failures. You know, someone tried something, it didn't work. I mean, there's lots of research on ways to and I hate to use the word, but there's a lot of consultants out there in a previous life. When we wanted to innovate, we brought all various stakeholders together, and we went offsite and had some folks that, and some new ideas did come out of it. I mean, but there's lots of, I mean, there's compensation, but there's other structural ways.
But I think you can also create, kind of along those lines, create incentives for management. I mean, one idea I thought was pretty cool we used was where you had mature revenue streams, because ultimately you're trying to make money. It's fun to say, you know, we want to innovate, but at the end of the day, the company is the box to make money. That's really what it, to create shareholder value.
Right, and that's the problem.
But, so one of the things we did was we had mature revenue streams, and we taxed them. So in other words, we had a requirement of what we needed to meet, and we pushed the businesses to exceed that requirement, and then create a tax. One of the things management gets involved in is, as you start to mature, well, if I grow 3 to 5% and I take no risk, I'm kind of okay. I'm not gonna lose my job. You know, so you get into that mode of, I just want to make my numbers, but I'm not going to go and try to hit a home run.
Yeah.
So what we did was we created a tax on the business, on each one of the business units, and then created like a home run fund. So then we had everyone present their ideas for how they would hit a home run, and we picked one and said, okay, you will fund it. You're not going to be penalized for swinging for the fences. But if you strike out, you know, you'll be okay. But you can't do it everywhere.
Right.
So it became very targeted about how we would do it.
Was that a board level decision, or was that a management?
No, that was management. That was within the management of the company.
Okay.
But it's a way of creating, and then you force, everyone was paying the tax.
Yeah.
Because everyone was paying the tax, everyone had a vested interest in coming up with an idea.
Right.
So they got everyone else's tax, but you could only have
pretty
one
cool.
winner.
I like that.
But it kind of worked.
This was a public company, Fortune 500?
Yep.
Okay.
How was the decision, who was making the decision as to what idea would get funded?
Basically, it came down to the group director. So we did it within our group. So it was myself and the head of the group that we kind of picked. These are the ones we're going to bet on. Here's where we're going to bet the money.
Going back to this, there's almost a sense, and it could be written, you deliberately wrote it this way, that, okay, boom, we've got a young CEO, we're going to, we're not innovating, let's change the comp. First thing out of the bet. No change in strategy, no removing anybody, the COO, et cetera, no reorganization. We don't hear anything about that, which would normally go on, I think, before you'd get to the level, okay, we tried everything else, now it's got to be compensation. I certainly wouldn't do the board, but we're now talking about management compensation. So that, I don't know if you wrote the case that way. Deliberately,
well, the case was written from the point of view of the board, but before I start removing people or making changes, I like to give people a chance and incentivize them the right way before I kind of make those kind of structuring decisions, right? Because it's not clear to me whether it's the people or the incentives that's really holding us back. So, So, I mean, what I'm hearing is leave the board comp alone, let's work on the management comp, but even before that, are there other ways to make the management more innovative? And I guess one solution could be this kind of a tax structure. IBM had this horizons-based model of innovating, which was basically categorized businesses into H1, H2, H3, and H3 was really, really innovative. H2 was something that could scale, but stick it into the business unit, and H1 was something that's existing already as a business model. So
some of what I've been seeing a lot of is to end up with a culture that's innovative, because that's really what you want, right?
Yeah.
You want a culture that's innovative.
Yeah.
It starts at the CEO, which means the CEO has to clearly prize, value innovation.
Yeah.
And that means he pays attention, he/she pays attention to it, prioritizes prioritizes it, whether it's program like this, program like Google did. I mean, there are a lot of different ways to foster an innovative culture, and I guess that's the question. I mean,
right.
Looking at the different alternatives and figuring out what will work in this environment for this company.
One point I want to make is, okay, innovation is inherently uncertain. There'll be a lot of mistakes. How would we as a board see those mistakes? How would we as a board see potential hits to earnings? And what's holding us back from making changes, including myself, if things don't work out? We got big projects, small projects, doesn't matter, but it can affect us short term. So it's also a short term versus a long term tension. So how do we address that?
Experience with innovation. I think back in the company I was in my formative years, General Instrument, we were ruthless copiers.
Right.
We drove the cost down, beat everybody, and went offshore before Taiwan, before anyone did. Mm-hmm. But we tried innovation, it never worked. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'd buy companies and we'd copy. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you look at innovation, you know, if you have the same people, same things they've done, it's pretty hard just to say, I'm going to start innovating because, come on, give me some ideas around here. You have to bring some new blood to the table. You have to hire some new people. You don't have to hire a senior. I always say, we're going to have an innovation VP. We're going to have this VP. But I think if you bring some new talent in, you know, that's the best way to do it. Bring culture change, you know, and empower them, you as the CEO.
Yep.
Otherwise, I think you're just moving the deck chairs around.
Well, what
compensation is in it?
What happened to listening to what the customer wants through the sales force? Rather than putting somebody on staff who's going to go sit in a room and come up with a couple of light bulbs. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where most of this innovation comes from, is doing something better. You guys gave the customer what they wanted, which is lower price, apparently.
Yeah.
I was thinking, to your point, that really only been 3 years, and this the case says it started from his work as a professor at MIT, so he's still there or he's not far removed. Is there ways to tap into going on there to drive innovation? Maybe you get it more cheaply if people are doing it kind of part of their research, because look at how this turned into a company.
Absolutely.
And I think to your question with the board, that just has to do with, I would think, good transparency and communication at board meetings between, you know, with what's going on, so that if there's some project or different things that the CEO is championing and being visible as a supporter of innovation, and if something doesn't quite go right, and, you know, it's not a surprise to the board, and I think it's also how big of a bet you're taking in the short term.
Yeah. Makes sense. Other thoughts?
I wouldn't dismiss corporate venture capital in a business that moves at the speed that your business moves at, from zero to IPO.
Yeah.
You know, you collected some cash, business is good, you're looking over the horizon.
Yeah.
You know, to horizon 3. But there may be some opportunities to use the capital you've like from the public markets to
be a
identify what you think innovation really looks like, so the company can see it.
Yeah.
That's one message. But the other part that's important is you begin to listen to the outside world in a different way, because you've been very focused on your goals and racing through the IPO window. So there's a lot of benefits to having listening posts in academia and putting your money to a good use to help your core technology underneath this voice activation thing. So I do want to raise my hand for that.
That makes sense.
Work. If there is a good receiver on the other side, product line manager, group manager, who's accountable, maybe through a tax, to fund the listening, the active listening, it can work very well.
Yep.
I would also offer that in order to navigate the dynamics of how, you know, shareholders potentially tend to not reward innovation because it doesn't deliver results immediately.
Yeah.
Some of that innovation can be financed. So using the company's cash from its recent equity raise is an option, but debt is always less expensive than equity, and if the core business is continuing to generate cash flow, there is a path to essentially lever that stream,
yeah,
and use the capital specifically to fund whatever the next idea is or the innovation is.
I just kind of feel compelled to say I'm not exactly sure that the market doesn't reward innovation.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty clear that large, important companies have run losses for a long time.
Yeah.
Amazon?
One example.
Tesla.
That the market embraces
and
celebrates. So may not get in with the cool kids, but I think expecting the market to penalize you, which is sort of the fundamental thesis you have, isn't proven out every time.
Why you need to understand what the shareholder
value is. I understand your point on that. My experience is our shareholders, a long-term holder was an 18-month shareholder.
Mm-hmm.
They held for 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
Why? There's new merchandise they're interested in, the market changes.
What?
You're a relatively,
The point I'm making, which is that some companies, clearly they attract shareholders that are going for revenue growth, and they don't care about losses, right?
Right.
And that's some company models. Other company models are you're being measured on your EBITDA. Other companies are on net income. So, companies of certain profiles attract certain shareholders, so it's important if you're public for a company to understand who they're attracting and why. Then they'll understand the drivers.
I'm not sure that governs. I understand, of course. You should be aware of your shareholders.
You should be aware of it. I'm not saying.
Yeah, of course. Well, then, if in the normal course of being aware of it is fine, and you want to prepare them for that, you can signal that in a lot of ways.
Well,
build
it into your expectations.
That's right. You build it into your models, and your, as I said, your communications, and you can signal that stuff is important. But if you feel so compelled as the CEO to lunge at quote innovation or whatever that might mean in the context of the case study, you have a responsibility to explain that to your shareholders.
Yeah.
And maybe you want to prepare for their response, which I'm sure is going to be a third grade, a third I'll see, and a third I hate it, because they're shareholders. then you have to be prepared for it. But if you don't have the conviction, right?
Yeah.
Then and you're expecting failure, I would ask that question as a director. Is that you seem very focused on the downside protection. Which I think would cause me to start to ask the question, how much do you love that plan? Like, how much do you really believe?
Well, we know research shows. Yeah.
It's a non-starter as presented as people are trying to help and offer up different thinking, but at the end of the day, what was the outcome? Because as presented, I don't think you're going to gain support at this point.
Right. It looks like there is zero support here, so the outcome is defeated. But I think we came out with a lot of useful discussion about where we should be focusing our attention to enhance innovation in the company, which is seems like management and below, right?
I have one other thought here. I've been in private companies, not public ones, but it's the same thing. You know, when you get to a certain level, and everybody has to have a China outsourcing strategy. Everybody has to have innovation. Innovation. It's like we have to have innovation, so we'll get some innovation. But I think what you have to tell people is what the heck it is. You know, if you look at your product and say, well, it has a new, we're going to go with this new web-enabled such and such, or you know, there's three features that you want to really put the money in. Everyone will say, great, that's great innovation. But just the concept innovation, I just find it's like, what's the
different
next,
things
it's the next shiny object. Let's all run to innovation. So tell them what it is. What do you want to accomplish here?
Let me ask,
if it's attacking whole new areas, tell them.
Let me agree with you, but from a different angle. And from a psychological point of view, the psychologists say there's five big personality factors, and one of those big personality factors is called openness to new experiences. We'll be publishing an article in Psychology Today next month on openness to new experiences, and it's based on experience I had with a client. He was a candidate to become CEO of a company, talked to the recruiter, and it's a private equity portfolio company. And I suggested to my client, ask the recruiter this question: how open is the private equity partner to new experiences on a scale of 0 to 10? And the recruiter said 1 to 2 on a scale of 0 to 10. And that really took my client back and says, what do you mean? He says, well, my private equity client knows what needs to be done. He's put enough money into the company, he doesn't want to put any more money into it. He just wants you to implement his plan. And he's fired the last CEO because the last CEO didn't implement his plan. Well, that one question sort of uncovered, you know, what would have been a core problem. And he would have eventually figured it out in a month or two, but he was able to get the signal. But there's another article, and I think this relates to your point. Being too open to new experiences is also a problem. And we've embedded in the case is, this is an MIT professor who started a new company. I say this as an academic myself. You tend to be excited by new ideas.
Yeah, we are.
And we all know these CEOs who are extraordinarily brilliant, and they got something that seems to be working okay, but then all of a sudden this new shiny object comes and they want to go over here, and the new shiny buzzword innovation comes and they want to go over here. And it's the role of the board to basically be checks and balances on some of these issues.
Yeah.
So from a psychological point, you could, Kartik was defining it in terms of options. How do we do the compensation? But you could also do it in terms of, you know, tell me about openness to new experiences on a 0 to 10 scale. Pick a number and then explain why, and that might get you to the same place. Thank you very much, Kartik. We are going to have a case next month, and you're all invited. It is not the Wynn Hotel case, but it will be inspired by the Wynn Hotel, and I will be playing Mr. Wynn.
is it a real case, or it's hypothetical?
We were taking the basic Wynn model, toning it down a little bit, but the board then has to make a presentation of what are you going to do with the founder who started the company,
whose name's on the
door, but now he's a liability. What are you going to do about that?
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to leave.
No, of course not.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.